Wow. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, it's always so good to have you in the studio, because what I didn't learn in school, you teach me as far as the economy and all those things, and many of us, but they're so complex, and so many of us don't understand how the economic system works in this country. We say we do, but we really don't. Because it's so complex, it's another one of those times you say, "Well, it's complicated." this monetary system in this nation is complicated.
Well, yeah, and then we were talking off the air about this reversal of the quantitative easing,
right?
There has been writing now about.
So what is the quantitative easing?
Well, we talked about quantitative easing during the recession, and starting in 2008, the Federal Reserve started using its power to essentially print money and use that money to buy debt instruments, federal debt, as well as mortgage-backed securities and corporate debt. And they bought this debt and put it into essentially a portfolio owned by the government, and the portfolio had been financed on printed money. You know, it was new money that they used to generate the wherewithal to buy this stuff. And some of it was used to basically finance the debt, right? The government issues debt instruments to finance its deficit, and the government was buying it for itself. But everyone knew that at some point these debt instruments would be sold back to the public.
Well, Sandy, so, before you go any further,
yeah.
The more they print the money, what is that backed by?
Well, the federal government's money isn't backed by anything but the trust of the American people. Ever since Nixon broke the connection between the dollar and gold, there isn't something that backs the dollar other than the public's trust in the value of the dollar. And however, the dollar is an extremely valuable currency. I suppose in that respect, it's a bit like Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't have anything behind it other than a belief that someone's going to buy it from
you.
Yeah,
but the dollar is not Bitcoin. The world still looks at the dollar.
Well, but the dollar is a trusted currency in terms of its use for buying and selling things, and it's trusted to have a value, and that trust has created quite a stable value for the dollar. So what happened with quantitative easing is the government would put money into the economy, essentially. Increasing the dollars in the economy is an expansionist kind of thing. In all other things being equal, it's inflationary. But during the recession after 2008, our economy was in a potentially deflationary condition. So the government was, we had both big deficits that were essentially the Congress approving the expenditure of many more dollars by the government than they were taking in taxes. And on top of that, we had this quantitative easing with the Federal Reserve also injecting money into the economy to the tune of trillions of dollars. I think it was about $5 to $7 trillion total over the total period of this quantitative easing.
Yeah, it says $8 trillion.
$8 trillion. And so now that $8 trillion of assets is going to get sold back into the economy. And when the dollars were printed and used to purchase this, that was expansionary. Potentially inflationary, but it was in an economy that was in recession.
It was necessary.
Yeah. Now, when they sell those back into the economy, they'll be taking dollars out of the economy. People who buy those debt instruments will be essentially giving money back to the Federal Reserve, and so the amount of money in circulation will go down. That'll have a deflationary effect. It'll reduce inflation, and that's why it's being done.
Reducing inflation doesn't happen overnight. It's a slow process.
Well, inflation itself isn't necessarily such a slow process going up. It is true that deflation and the reduction of inflation can be relatively slow, but it certainly wasn't slow in 2008. I mean, when the window of the of the uh, the business cycle opens and closes, things happen to tend to happen very abruptly. When the government uses its policies, things tend to happen more slowly. And so, this is probably going to have an effect to dampen inflation without ending inflation.
So you talk about the Federal Reserve, which is separate from the government.
It is a quasi-governmental entity, right?
That's
created by the government, but not run by the government directly.
Yeah. So, and really can make policy.
Yes, and the magic of it, from the standpoint of why it was created and why it has worked pretty well, is that because it's independent from politics per se. Because it can make its policy independently, and because it can be trusted, possibly, until maybe the Trump administration, it could be trusted to operate independent from politics. The financial world and the public could believe that the Fed was going to operate responsibly to moderate inflation and to support employment. That's basically its mission, to try and get as close to full employment as possible without having the damage for the economy of inflation.
But how can it be separate from the government when the chair people are appointed by?
Well, they're supposed to be
by the government.
It's a bit like the Supreme Court, right? The Supreme Court isn't supposed to be responsive to Democratic and Republican voters, but its members are appointed. The Federal Reserve is similarly appointed, and happily, up to this point at least, the Federal Reserve has been perceived to be operating on more or less pure economic principles and not political principles.
So, and the Federal Reserve is not looking to make profit? They're not?
No. There's no profit motive on the part of the Federal Reserve board members and the head of the Federal Reserve, and happily also it has not appeared to be a revolving door for people to get a job at the Fed and then migrate over into a highly profitable financial community.
The Financial Times was a bearer of the predictable bad tidings yesterday. Just from that day's digital front pages, live news updates column, these were some of the headlines. Ford forecasts car industry consolidation as capital becomes constrained. Treasuries and U.S. stocks slip as investors gird for monetary policy tightening. Bank of Canada prepares to act more forcefully after latest rate raise. European stocks enter June on a muted note after turbulent month. German retail sales fell 5.4% in April. UK house price growth slows in May. China manufacturing sector activity shrinks for the third consecutive month, which is an automatic recession, right?
Right.
Government bonds sell off as Eurozone inflation hits record high. J.P. Morgan chief says hurricane is bearing down on economy. Sandy, that doesn't sound, like a bright future.
Well, I think, Jamie Dimon is actually a fairly principled guy in terms of his public utterances. He's the one who talked about the hurricane in the future.
Right.
And I do believe that there is a confluence of situations now which doesn't portend well for the financial performance
globally
in the world globally over the next 12 months. I think my hope is that they talk about having a soft landing from an inflationary period. I hope we have a modest accident. It's not going to be a soft landing per se, but I hope the damage that's done during the landing is modest.
You know, Sandy, you are. You're clearly not saying that this is going to be a prolonged issue. And throughout my life and me understanding somewhat about recessions and those kind of things and inflation that I've seen, I've never seen it turn around in a short period of time, especially global.
Well, yes. And I think the only hope here is that part of the driving force for this recession is going to be shortages.
Right.
and shortages of the right kind of labor in the right place, shortages in the supply chain, shortages of particular goods, that some of those shortages are created by short-term circumstances. So if we can reverse the shortages and those things can become plentiful, then the question is how quickly can you revive the demand side for all those things that were in short supply? Because what's happening now is the recession might cure the shortages by shrinking the demand, right?
Yeah.
That's the bad, you know, the good news, bad news. Please, you know, end the shortage.
Right.
Okay, we're going to stop wanting what you make.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a very good way to solve it as far as you're concerned, if you're the supplier. But so, you know, there is some hope that a recession driven by shortages and temporary circumstances could be relatively short if you can solve for those things.
But Sandy, last week, you talked about an article that talked about 200 Americans making $250,000 a year, a living paycheck to paycheck.
Well, we've got a problem in our socioeconomic system in the United States that is different than the rest of the world, and the biggest part of our problem is that we, in our infinite wisdom, have decided politically not to have a social safety net for everybody in this country as regards health care and child care, education costs, okay, and adequate pensions. So in our country, in order to make it, we have to spend a considerable portion of that $250,000 or whatever we make, we have to spend a considerable portion of it on these fundamental things. And if we aren't spending it on it, then we're facing a future that is very
dire. So, Sandy, you keep beating that same drum. You're never going to get off that, are you?
I'm never going to get off it because I've had an epiphany and realized that we have backed our people into a corner, but it's not just our people. We've backed our economic system into a serious corner by deciding in the infinite wisdom of those conservatives who think that this kind of socialization, as they would characterize it, would be bad for the economy. And my epiphany is that no, what's bad for the economy is not having it.
Yeah. Okay. We've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. I could love.